call the Board of Supervisors meeting to order at this time, and may we all stand and pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time, we'll have a presentation. Frank Johnson from NAACP. And Sheriff Adam, are you? Go ahead, excuse me, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman and Supervisors. I'd like to introduce this gentleman who would like to say a few words of thank you.
Your name? Your name?
My name is Shardul Bajwa. I want to say thanks to the supervisor, everybody, who allow us to speak in your meeting. First, I have greatest and more thanks to the police department who give a warm welcome to a dignity people from India. That people, his name was Paramjit Singh Sarau. He was Inspector General of Punjab. When he come over here, he visited the police department and sheriff department. They introduced him everything. He went back with great understanding and great respect for Indian American culture. He told me before he leave, I will be very happy to introduce all those things to the Indian and especially Punjab police. We are impressed from the technology which is used over here. So I say thanks again to police department and everybody. Above all, I on behalf of Central Valley Sports Club of California, I would like to extend a personal invitation to everybody. There is going to event that called a tournament on July the 2nd on Hatch Road. That the place is Bluff Regional Park. River Bluff Regional Park that is close to East Gate series. We will be there, all the people around the area. There will be neighbors, 600 people. So we honor your presence over there. I request everybody, please come anytime between 12 to 3, we will be over there. At least there will be 600 people. We will enjoy your presence, and they will be happy to see you guys over there. In the future, it will be a better understanding with the community. I say thanks again for your time. Thank you.
Once again, good morning. Frank Johnson, President of the NAACP Stanislaus County. Many times we're standing before you with complaints or arguing, or having everyone dot I's and cross T's, but rarely do we come to say thank you. What we're showing to this gentleman and the Inspector General that showed up overnight to Stanislaus County, the open door from the Sheriff's Department was overwhelming. It was a red carpet treat. They opened up facilities and allowed this gentleman to tour. They gave great, great respect. This gentleman is in charge of basically two borders, Pakistan and China. 70,000 police officers and over 35 chiefs, if you want to put it in American terms. So he's a pretty powerful gentleman in India. So on behalf of the NAACP, I'd also like to thank the Sheriff's Department for changes that has taken place within the 4 months. They've cultural changes, community relations, open door policy. So with that, I'd like to thank Adam Christensen, with the head of the Sheriff's Department, with this plaque. And it reads, in recognition of your achievement in cultural diversity and your contributions to your community, on behalf of NAACP, thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
And here's a picture. And thank you.
Thank you. Adam, do you wish to say a few words?
Well, I'm very humbled and honored. You know, we work hard to build relationships of trust in the community, and sometimes we're very successful and other times we're not. But this just demonstrates really the commitment that the men and women of the Sheriff's Department and in public safety, law enforcement, Stanislaus County-wide have to protect and serving the community. So, you know, this is not about me. This is about the people who do the work. So thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. At this time, on public comment, anyone wishing to make a comment on any item that's not on today's agenda? And we have Deborah Harbor. Please state your name and a five-minute limit.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Deborah Harper, and I reside in Modesto, California. I'm here to establish a peaceful path. I won't go through the little story I did last time. I did forget the punchline, though. So I'm here in response to a two-year public library suspension on false information. My question is, how can a citizen protect themselves from somebody in a half an hour distracting and disrupting a peaceful citizen from accomplishing their task in a locked genealogy room where you actually have to sign up and go in? How can a citizen prevent themselves from somebody coming in, fabricating false information, causing a scene, and ultimately getting kicked out of the library for 2 years after denying petty accusations from various citizens of all race, and have that the accurate information ignored, leading to that 2 year suspension? That's my question to Mr. Robinson.
We need not respond to public comment.
Okay, thank you. Also, that's in addition to multiple suspensions throughout the community, which is nothing less than obstructing a peaceful person's path with false, hostile encounters and information. It's been going on for years, and my attempt for years has been to diffuse the hostility in public venues. You know, we're not here to, I'm not here to change anybody. When I speak to somebody peacefully and directly or non-directly, it's not to change who they are, but can we come to an agreement in a public venue, like in the libraries, not to do the trauma drama and obstruct, you know, a peaceful person's path who's there just to get their business taken care of. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to make comments this time? Yes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen. Emerson Drake, long time, 24 years in Stanislaus County. I was here a couple of years ago when a gentleman came forward and made a complaint about the police department. And as he walked out the door, he was braced as if he was in boot camp by the sheriff and told in no uncertain terms, you come see me before you come see the Board of Supervisors. So there was a gentleman named John Richard Mataka. I think he's a longtime Stanislaus County resident. I believe he's been working for the county for over 35 years. Wrote a letter to the Attorney General, and he asked for a steroid investigation to be performed on the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department. He thought that there were some problems there. Matter of fact, the letter was printed in the local print media. I'm not sure about how long ago. It wasn't that far. He got a response from the Attorney General that said, you need to talk to the sheriff first. So, under a citizen's complaint procedure, and it's labeled CC11-13, John Mataka left a formal complaint saying, as a resident of this county, I need to know that steroid use is not prevalent within the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department. There have been a number of resident fatalities within the Sheriff's Department during the last 2 years, and as a resident of this county, I need to know that the officers on the street and the officers on the jail are not pumped up on steroids and out of control. The recent event, we'll leave the lady's name blank, it's just a former, she was a detective and no longer detective at the time. After her arrest, DeVee pointed out that numerous syringes and vials of steroids were found at her residence, and that was of great concern to this individual. I formally requested an independent investigation to steroid use within the Sheriff's Department. I'm requesting an independent investigation of this issue, like the Modesto Police Department, which you can say yes or no on that one, is currently doing. That was a private individual rather than the FBI. I was informed by the Attorney General's office that I should contact the Sheriff's Department first. I just wanted to read all of it about the complaint process, and of course he attaches the information that he received from them. The sheriff, very nice gentleman, basically said, we're not going to perform an investigation that you didn't provide enough information. You specified no individual officer. Fair response, I suppose. But at the bottom of his, first of all, he sent his response by the mail. This gentleman uses a post office box. You can't get a signed receipt from a post office box. So Sheriff Adam Christensen followed it up with an email, including a PDF that had all the information to his response. But at the bottom of his email was what I think is profound concern, at least on many people's part. He wrote, and this is not a famous quote, it's not a paraphrasing of a famous quote, do it to your heart's content. Doing the wrong thing for what one sincerely believes is the right reason can be most dangerous. He signed his name after that. Sending this to a citizen that made a formal complaint. Now you have to remember that September 30th, the sheriff, after 6 days worth of investigation, said my detective committed no wrongdoing. 6 months after, 6 months investigation by the sheriff's department, they came to that same basic conclusion. 3 weeks of investigation by the DA's department brought on second-degree murder and manslaughter charges. The gentleman, John Matata, his comment to the sheriff saying, doing the wrong thing for what one sincerely believes to be the right reason could be most dangerous. I took the sheriff's quote to me on his email as a threat. I took it as he was saying that my questioning of steroid use in the sheriff's department was wrong, even though I might believe the questioning is right, and that this could be dangerous for me personally or my family. John Richard Mataka. I just wanted to share this with you, because it was walked through the official procedures, step by step, this is the sheriff's response. I don't know that I consider it reasonable. I'm not going to characterize it. I read it to you word for word. I'll be happy to provide the documentation, including the original email he sent. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time. Have a great day. I know you have a lot on your plate.
I'm just going to jump in just for a second. That quote at the bottom, I received an email from the sheriff last night that had the same quote on it, so I don't want him to think that this is directed towards him. I think we all receive emails from the sheriff at different times, and I think it was one that I read last night at the bottom of the same email, just for whatever that's worth.
I understand, and that's one of the reasons that when I first heard the quote, I started Googling it. I thought, well, maybe this is a common quote. Maybe it's a paraphrasing of a quote. But it comes across as a message, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
and this individual who made the official complaint following the procedures felt that way. Maybe that's an inappropriate quote for the sheriff to put on the bottom of his email, but that's not for me to say.
Sure, and I just want to make sure he knew it wasn't directed specifically at him. It is just a quote that we all...
I'm just telling you what the gentleman said.
Okay.
He'd love to be here, but of course he's working today. Have a great day.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to make comment this time, public comment? If not, we'll go to consent calendar, and at this time I'm going to be pulling B25. Does the board have any other they wish to pull, or shall we go to consent? May I have a motion?
So move to approve consent calendar unless item B25.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. We will now go to B25. Okay.
Yes, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, item B25 is an ordinance which, if adopted by the Board of Supervisors, would add Chapter 2.98 to the Stanislaus County Code, and thereby prohibiting the county from requiring project labor agreements on county construction projects. The proposed ordinance would prohibit the county from requiring a project labor agreement as a condition of a contractor bidding on a county project unless it was required by state or federal law. I would point out that it does not prohibit or even preclude the contractor from separately and independently entering into a project labor agreement as they develop the bid proposal for submittal for a public project. Project labor agreement is agreement between a labor organization and a contractor which applies to a specific project. In this case, staff feels that the adoption of the ordinance will support the county's goal of fair and open competition in contracting for publicly funded construction projects. Staff recommendation is to approve the ordinance and to implement in Chapter 2.98 in the Stanislaus County Code.
Okay. Anyone on the board have a question or comment?
I just had a question. Is this currently required now, project labor agreement?
No, it's not. It is optional on the part of the contractor whether they want to include one or not include one. The county could separately require it on any particular project, on one particular project, and not require it on another project. What we're trying to do is simply say, no, we're not going to consider project labor agreements unless they're a requirement of a state or federal contract. And further, that if an independent contractor who is preparing a bid on a public contract determines that it is in their best interest in competing for the county's business to develop a project labor agreement with organized labor, that contractor can go ahead and do that, can complete that process, can have it understood before they enter a bid for a specific county project. So it doesn't preclude a contractor from doing it, it just precludes the county from requiring it as a condition of bidding on a public contract.
Are there times when state or federal government requires that?
There could be times under certain conditions when state or federal agency would require the condition of receiving funds, the contractors entering into a project labor agreement prior to bidding on a project. We don't have any of those at this time, and I can't remember the last time that we have. This more than anything is a policy statement that underscores the value of open competition in spending taxpayers' money to support public agency infrastructure improvements, and as I indicated at the outset, it doesn't preclude a contractor from entering into a project labor agreement with organized labor on a particular project. It just precludes the county from making that a condition of the bid unless required as a condition of receiving state or federal funding.
Any other questions or comments? If not, then open to public comment. And we have Gary Emery.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith and fellow board members. My name is Gary Amering. I reside at 10866 Cleveland Avenue in Oakdale. Been here all my life. And have also been a part of watching these programs on both sides of the street, organized and the private the non-union people. And in almost every instance that we found that we were required to become part of an organized situation, there was a substantial amount of funds that was deducted from the worker, had to be passed on to the organized labor people, of which there was no benefit to them at all. Some of the information that has to do with being able to bid some of this work when it requires a union contract. Although we have done a lot of work for union deals, having to sign a one-time union agreement, again, that is not, in my eyes, the best way to treat the person that's doing the work nor the best way to spend the dollars. The information that I have indicates that there is approximately 15 to 20% greater cost when you have to require a union or an organized an agreement go along. That's been a study that's been going on for a while. So the thing that I want to see here is we're not trying to preclude anybody from bidding a project. We just want a fair and even playing field in order to come and participate in this organization, in this opportunity to get our projects, win bids, and promote the welfare of our workers. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to say we have a large number requesting to speak today, and so may we not repeat, and we're limiting to 5 minutes per person. A. Sanchez? I can't. Yeah, there you go. Excuse me, I can't read the first part, and I don't want to.
Good morning. My name is Ana Luisa Sanchez. I live in Manteca.
Thank you.
And we have a small company. Currently, we have we're just trying to survive. And we were awarded a project that we're going to be working here in Modesto. We've done work in the past. And I'm just here to support B25. And as we all know, these are very hard times. We're in construction cleaning. And not much I can say except that like I said, I'm here to support, and I hope that we all get the opportunity to bid for all the projects. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Goring, or looks like G-O-C-H-N-I-N-Y.
Excuse me. Pardon my handwriting.
Pardon me.
Nicole Gehring with Associated Builders and Contractors. Good morning, Chairman Monteith and members of the Board of Supervisors. Here today in support of Consent Agenda Item B25. Just don't want to repeat what everybody has said, but in favor of fair and open competition and allowing the opportunity for all workers to be able to bid on county projects that their taxpayers fund. So as far as I know, there are no state and federal mandates on any project labor agreements in order to clear up that question. So there's nothing mandating PLAs. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ken Miller.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Ken Miller. I'm a business agent for Iron Workers Local 378, Oakland. I'm here representing our hundreds of workers that are members that are in Stanislaus County. I'm here to speak against B-25. Project labor agreements, they don't say anything about prohibiting anybody from bidding. Basically, they're in place to make sure contractors are fair to the workers, pay a livable wage rate. Without project labor agreements, you get out-of-state contractors that come in, bring their workforce with them, get your money, they leave. They don't spend their tax dollars here. With project labor agreements, there are things like local hire. So the people that live here get to work here. Guaranteed no work stoppages. You get qualified, quality, highly trained people with accredited apprenticeship programs. PLAs have constantly, if you look at the history of them, constantly brought projects in under budget and on time. They have safe job sites. Things in my way, I can't see my notes. That's all I really have. In closing, I'm just urging you to vote no on B-25. Thank you.
Peter Halver.
Good morning. My name is Peter Halver. I'm here in opposition to B-25. I am a member and work for not only the local contractors, but the National Electrical Contractors Association, Association of thousands of contractors across the United States, and in particular our chapter here in Northern California. PLAs have been utilized for over the last 60 years. They've done tremendous amounts of good. Not to repeat what the other people have said or anything, but one of the things that I think that you should consider is by limiting your ability to have the county do PLAs, you're talking about limiting with the contractors, but it's not necessarily the contractors that are, they sign on to it, that's true, but you're involved in writing it. Each PLA is specific to the needs of how the county is looking at it and they're contracting. Also, under California law, the prevailing wages are required to be paid. So what you're doing is just making a fair and level playing field for everyone, including your own contracting office. Because without the specifics of the PLA, then you're limiting yourself. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Eric Christian? Kristen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. My name is Eric Christian. I'm the executive director of the Coalition for Fair Employment and Construction. 12 years ago, a group of contractors, both union and Merrick Shop, came together and decided to create an organization solely dedicated to opposing what they viewed as the most egregious, discriminatory, and wasteful item in the construction world at the time and currently, and that was project labor agreements. A group of men and women came together and formed an organization solely opposed to what they viewed as a destructive, discriminatory, and wasteful agreement, now commonly referred to as project labor agreements. They have put millions of dollars into efforts to oppose these. They have currently been banned in what today would be the 8th entity in California. In November, voters voted in the county of San Diego 76-24 to oppose these hideous agreements. Louisiana, I was just informed, signed and has become what I believe is the 14th state to ban these explicitly today, this morning that happened there. These are not an agreement that anybody but a small select group of very politicized, hyper-politicized union business agents support. Union contractors don't support these. Merit shop contractors and their employees don't support these. By the way, 85% of the construction workforce in this country chooses to wake up on a daily basis and go to work in a union-free environment. They should not be punished for joining a non-union group or contractors. They should not be punished and forced to join and pay union dues as a condition of employment. It's outrageous that that exists in this country in this day and age. Unfortunately, it does. Increasingly less so. You're taking a great step, and I applaud your vision and your ability to see these for what they are, which is a waste of taxpayer dollars because the fewer bidders that you have. You just heard from contractors that will not bid these. Regardless of the merits that supposed PLA proponents say that these have, you just heard from contractors that said they won't bid these. They harm their workers by forcing them to pay union dues and pay into union health, welfare, and pension plans. That's explicit language that's contained within PLAs. Even if they have their own plans, they have to pay into union health, welfare, and pension plans. Who can justify that? Who can stand up here? Well, apparently there's a few people shameless enough to get up here and justify it, but reasonable people who understand what these are about can't justify that. They explicitly ban non-union apprentices from being able to work on the projects. That language is actually explicitly in there. So what you're doing today is what increasingly a lot of entities are doing, which are just doing away with these agreements and allowing an open and competitive marketplace to determine who the lowest responsible bidder is. If you want to determine how to hire locally or to have local hire ordinances, you can do that separately from the discrimination and waste that's encompassed in a project labor agreement. So congratulations on your vision. Our contractors and associations and people that belong and support this stand with you, and we'll make sure that your efforts are lauded far and wide. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chris Rename? Pardon me, I know I'm butchering their name, but pardon.
Good morning, and thank you for your time. I'll be brief so some more information can come to the floor. My name is Chris Graney. I'm a business rep, the Insulators Local 16, representing members of and working members of Stanislaus County. I urge you to, do not limit your options in construction projects. I hope that you would consider information. It seems to me that maybe some of you aren't really aware of what's in project labor agreements and what they're about. You'll get information today about that. Consider the information. I'm against the B-25. I urge you to, interview other municipalities, counties, cities, school districts, a lot of other entities that utilize project labor agreements, and actually look and see what's in a project labor agreement, and don't take it at face value from anybody, and research that yourself. There's a lot of things to research. Hopefully you'll do due diligence to do that, and I appreciate you not supporting B-25. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard Markvinson.
Good morning, members and staff. Richard Markison and I represent two contractor groups in California, electrical contractors and plumbing contractors, who are both signatory and non-signatory. One of the previous speakers suggested that you contact some other public agencies, and I think that's an excellent one, but let me give you some evidence. San Diego Unified School District passed a PLA last year. The first bid that came back for a project came in at 130% of what the engineer's estimate was. Huge overage on what was being proposed for a project. That meant that taxpayers received about 70 cents on every dollar that they spent on their construction. Another example, up in Sacramento, where I'm from, school district there used a project labor agreement on a new joint use facility that was a joint library and a new school. The construction manager told the bond oversight council, and he was a former business agent, he said, please don't tie my hands by imposing a project labor agreement. This reduces the number of contractors who are willing to bid on it, and more importantly for me, it reduces the number of subcontractors. When you reduce competition, you raise prices. This is a good measure for the taxpayers of your county. It's a prudent measure on your part, and we certainly support your efforts today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Kevin Dayton.
I'm Kevin Dayton, Government Affairs Director, Associated Builders and Contractors of California, or Construction Trade Association, representing predominantly Merritt Shop contractors. The taxpayers of this county should be very pleased today to see you taking proactive steps to protect fair and open competition and guarantee the best quality construction at the best price. I've been working for Associated Builders and Contractors in California since mid-1997, and one of my primary jobs has been to go to local governments and try to stop unions from cutting off competition and guaranteeing a monopoly for themselves by requiring contractors to sign project labor agreements. And I've been to many fiscally mismanaged, irresponsible governments, and it's sad to see nobody really caring about the taxpayers. And unfortunately, this became an epidemic. It became the primary political tactic that construction unions use to gain market share, subverting competition. Well, recently, people have suddenly begun realizing that the state of local governments in California needs to change, that we need to start focusing on spending the taxpayers' money wisely. And the movement has begun for fair and open competition guaranteed at local governments. And I am very pleased to see here today another county government in California saying, no more to this nonsense. We need to start managing the people's money correctly, wisely, efficiently, with accountability, with fair and open competition ordinances. Thank you for doing this today. All of the people who live in this county should be pleased and happy to see that you're going in the right direction on how they spend their money. Thank you.
Thank you. Billy Powell.
Good morning, gentlemen, members of the board, guests. My name is Billy Powell. I represent the local building trades, which covers Stanislaus County. I got to be honest with you, I was surprised to see this on your agenda. As Mr. Robinson stated, PLAs, we haven't been pushing PLAs. We haven't, It hasn't been a major issue in our area, so to limit our options to say, you know, like I say, it needs to, we definitely need to not limit what our opportunities are. I've heard several times as far as benefits to taxpayers from these. Yosemite Community College District, several projects under Bond Measure E were way under engineers' estimates. Okay, there were several out of state contractors, out of the area contractors, bringing their employees in, taking our bond money out of the area. You look at the legal fights that the college has right now as far as certain projects that were shut down, contractors going out of business, and they were ABC contractors. So, like I say, it's appreciate removing this from the consent items, and if nothing else, please do more research. I have tons of information that we can give you. I know in the past it has been given to the board, but we can definitely readdress it. State-approved apprenticeship programs with proven graduation rates, you know, providing career pathways for our students and residents of our county is one of our goals. If you look at the graduation rates for the union programs compared to the ABC program, there's a huge discrepancy there, as well as the number of apprentices that they actually put on job sites versus what our programs do. So, as was stated earlier, these PLAs can be drafted to suit your needs. Don't limit yourself. I appreciate your time and appreciate your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Tony Ledup.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak, Board of Supervisors. My name is Tony Ledoux. I reside at 3324 Plymouth Avenue here in Modesto. I guess with all due respect to all the speakers before and after me, I've been shamelessly representing working people for about 18 years as a business rep for sheet metal workers, Local 162, and approximately 12 years I've been the president of the Local Building Trades Council. People argue all day, and it comes down to individual ideology of union versus non-union. You can argue the cost, the savings, the competition, non-competition, but the point I want to make is it's an agreement. I've been involved in 10 negotiations with these type of agreements. Three of them actually came to result, had an agreement, did the project. One of them, the project, never followed through to planned fruition, but it worked for the part that it was there. The other four, five, or six, which entailed very long and laborious negotiations, never came to resolve. And the point was that it's an agreement that could be of interest to both parties, and if it contains items that interest and benefit both parties, like any other agreement, you come to a negotiated settlement. If it's not, the best alternative is usually no agreement. So it is a tool that is available to parties of a particular interest, and I don't understand why we would eliminate the possibility of a tool if something were to come up that it could be in the county's interest to negotiate an agreement and it met the interests of that party and the other side of the party. Why eliminate the tool just again on somebody's ideology of a union versus non-union? And I don't think it's necessary. It's kind of I suspect where it came from, but surprised that it's a necessity on a consent item agenda. That's all I'd say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thomas Aha. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Thank you, Chairman Montes, members of the board. I also rise in opposition to item B-25. Without being too redundant, I strongly support what Tony Ledoux has just said and what also Billy Powell said. These are not requirements that you use a project labor agreement. If you so choose to use it, it is there at your disposal. We're separated by a river and a line on a map, but in San Joaquin County, they've been using project labor agreements on county-funded projects for several years, to great success. They just completed a new Board of Supervisors building. They're about to build a hospital. Road construction, it's infinite. And its uses are infinite. There are construction companies moving into the Stockton area, formerly Bay Area companies. Sheedy Crane and Hoist, Hatton Crane and Rigging, Top Grade Construction, just to name the ones that come off my head right now. They've moved into the San Joaquin County because they recognize, not necessarily that it is a union-friendly town, but remember, they just reaffirmed their half-cent sales tax for road construction. That place is building things. They are forward-thinking. They're not looking over each other's backyard fence, finding ways to mess with them. Their eyes are focused on the future, and they're moving ahead. And they're not limiting their options on how they conduct their business. B-25, should you choose to continue with opposing the ability to use a project labor agreement, does just that. It limits your options, and I hope you'll find that that's not the best interest of the community. As was previously stated, you can use the language in those project labor agreements for your benefit. Local hire, local procurement of goods and services, keeping the tax dollars local so that perhaps we can fund our sheriff's department and our fire departments and our police departments more appropriately, rather than seeing our tax dollars go to other communities. These tax monies are local tax monies for a local project. It makes sense to have your local workforce gainfully employed on those projects. Just another option at your disposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bill Taylor?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen on the board. My name is Bill Taylor, and I'm the business manager for the plumbers and pipefitters in this area. I've heard some pretty nasty words opposing PLAs, and the fact that it's union against everybody else. The fact is I've been a member of this community for 35 years. My membership has been part of this community for over 100 years. We centrally located in Modesto in 2006 because 90% of our membership is within a 50-mile radius of this area. Sure, I'm in support of PLAs because that supports my people and puts them to work. We are part of the community. We have an apprenticeship program where we built a facility here where we went from being able to train 100 people to where we can train 400 people. We buy all our goods and services from this community. We just had an apprenticeship contest for the state of California where we spent over $60,000 in this community, in support of this community. So yeah, we just want the opportunity and the rights of everybody else in this community. We don't want that taken away. And this is a proposal to take that right away so that we don't have an opportunity to put the many people that live and work in this community to work. So that's what I'm looking at here. I'm not looking at this union against non-union. This is a tragedy against the city. I'm looking at putting my people that spend 5 years in an apprenticeship program training to do pipe fitting and plumbing work in the industry. So, yeah, I'm opposed to B-25. I think that it's an atrocity that we have to stand here and listen to this as if we're not part of this community. Thank you.
Thank you. Greg Armstrong?
Morning, Supervisor, Staff. Greg Armstrong. I'm with the National Electrical Contractors Association, and I represent dozens of electrical contractors, many of them that have their offices right here in town. Those contractors can't be here right now. They're out trying to get work and keep work, and times are really tough. But those contractors all support labor agreements. They support local hire, all the things you've heard about before. You've heard about the community. They would ask for a no vote with respect to this ordinance. And what we'd like to see done is maybe a little more research and go out and talk to some of the different awarding agencies that have decided to enter into labor agreements or decided not to. And just a quick example, because it sounds a lot like a union non-union thing, and it's a pretty hotbed issue. But I know in West Contra Costa Unified School District, which has done $700 million worth of work under labor agreements, the very first project in elementary school, about a $20 million school, went to a non-union contractor. They're not precluded from working on these projects. And again, this document can look a lot of different ways. It's a working document. There could be core employee language where a non-union contractor could bring in core employees and match it and work and also hire out of a local hiring hall. And in these tough economic times, I think that's really important that we do anything we can to promote keeping the money in our community, stimulating this community. And a lot of talk about the community. I know some of the folks that are here this morning aren't from this community. I think the gentleman on the left still lives in Colorado Springs and appears to be nothing more than a gun for hire. So, again, the local contractors urge you to vote no on this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Roger Newdeck.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm been a resident of the county here since 89. I live in Ceres. I'm the owner of Concrete Restoration. I hold five different state licenses. I've been involved in a lot of seismic upgrade projects in San Francisco area after the earthquake. For probably 10 years, I worked on maybe five different seismic upgrades, including San Francisco City Hall for about 3.5 years. Probably had, during that period of time, maybe 40 employees working under me. We trained most of our own crews. I've been opposed to union intervention primarily from the standpoint of how it robs the employees of monies that they're due, primarily because of the issue of having to have vested interest for several years in the union before they benefit from health and welfare benefits. I can't say so much about health, but certainly welfare. They lost approximately $6 an hour, and just round numbers, that they would never see. So for all those 40 employees, I don't know of any of them that ever received any benefit from welfare dollars. I don't know what the union was doing with it, but it never came back to the employees. And I'm faced with that issue right now on job sites. We're working for Ceres School District and also Modesto School District, where we may have to be forced into joining the labor agreement with the laborers union, and for the same reason I'm opposed to it from the standpoint of my employees. They're going to take the short end of the stick. Their checks are going to be cut down significantly, and they'll probably never see it because of the vested interest issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Ray Trujillo.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Board of Supervisors, Board members. Ray Trujillo. I represent 12 Western States for the Building and Trades Department out of Washington, D.C., and I represent the men and women in the construction industry. I work here out of California, which represents 350,000 men and women in the construction industry. I rise in the pros of 25 for these reasons. You've heard quite a bit about
prevailing wage in the law. Prevailing wage is nothing new. It was enacted by two Republican legislators from New York and Pennsylvania, Davis and Bacon. And they understood during the Depression that the infrastructure work that was going to be done needed to be done with the local contractors and local help members of the community, because they knew that if out-of-state contracts would come in, the money, they would do the work and the money would leave. Now, you've heard about Mr. Christensen. Mrs. Christensen, you're going to find out, changes the name of his organization from time to time when his credibility deteriorates. You will be given information today on Mr. Christensen and what he represents. The notion that the level playing field, non-union and union contractors can bid on any project. A good example is non-union contractors routinely bid on and win contracts. In fact, not only did non-union contractors bid on the Metropolitan Water District, a $2 billion Eastside Reservoir project in Riverside County, more than 70 non-union contractors usually worked on that project. So it's not a union, non-union. It's the rate that they have to pay, and it's set by the free market. The way prevailing wage works, if you have 25 carpenters here that make $5 an hour in this county, and you have 400 that make $25 an hour, that's going to be the rate. That's set by the free market. So I would urge you to do more research, especially on training, before you make this decision. Visit the apprenticeship training facilities here, and visit the non-unions. Look at the apprenticeship rate that they turn out. Look at the apprenticeship that we turn out. We spend millions of dollars on training every year. You gentlemen, you board members are stewards of the taxpayers' money. You want it built right the first time. I can, and you'll be given information where projects have been built and they've had been rebuilt because the non-union didn't do them right. So you're up to the taxpayers to do some more research before you make this decision. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Jim Conway.
Thank you, Chairman Monteith and board members. I'll try to be brief as well. I just I handed a DVD to the clerk to see that hopefully it gets to you, because we want to be able to make sure that you are able to get additional information from other sources, including other counties in the state, such as Imperial County, Santa Barbara, Santa Clara, and a few others, as well as some cities that have had great experiences under project labor agreements. We're hoping that you do take the time. We're frankly caught a bit off guard by this agenda item today. We just heard about it yesterday and came down to make sure that we got our statements on the record. But let me also say that, as has been said before, project labor agreements can and are tailored to specific projects. The county would be handcuffing itself for no good reason by eliminating or prohibiting project labor agreements. And in fact, you can set pre-qualifications, including accredited apprenticeship programs and things of this nature, to make sure that you are getting the best project and not simply the low bid. In some ways, you're handcuffed now by a pure low bid situation, but you could set pre-qualifications under a project labor agreement that would allow you to get the best of the contractors and the workers that are available in the area, keep those monies available, and reinvest it in the area. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Any additional comments? At this time, I'll turn it over to Executive Officer.
Yeah, I would like to make just a couple of clarifications to a number of comments that were made. First, the ordinance says proposed would not prohibit a contractor who is interested in submitting a bid on a county construction project from independently entering into a project labor agreement with labor and then developing that contract around the terms of the project labor agreement. It just precludes the requirement as a condition of submitting a bid. So if a PLA results in the most competitive bid, then that opportunity would present itself. Second, public agencies are required to pay prevailing wage rates, and if my recollection serves me, our sub-area in which our prevailing wage is determined is the Bay Area. That establishes the prevailing wage that the county is required to pay to workers on public projects. The question relating to bid estimate versus bid opening, we all know that estimates are just that. They are an attempt to get advance information before going to bid. We find very regularly that even when we get multiple estimates from highly trained and recognized professionals, that those estimates invariably come in over or under depending on market conditions, labor cost, availability of labor in the marketplace, and a number of other factors, raw materials. And so while I am very, very strong on using bid estimates, I don't rely on them in determining whether a PLA is a good idea or a bad idea. It is what it is. I would say in closing that that a project labor agreement is a tool that is available to contractors when developing bids if the contractor feels that that tool is going to result in the most competitive project cost. If that contractor does not feel that it is going to result in the most competitive project cost, then I would encourage the contractor not to use that so they can remain competitive. It is the duty and responsibility of public agencies to use public dollars in the most conscientious and cost-effective manner. And it is my opinion that if that means the use of project labor agreements, then an option is available to the contractors that are competing for the jobs. If it does not include project labor agreements, then we would, if you adopt the CEO recommendation, establish today an ordinance which would prohibit the requirement that project labor agreements be a condition of bidding on a county project.
I will now then bring it back to the board for discussion or comment. Anyone have a comment? Or is there a motion?
Could I just ask one question, an additional, because this is an item I'm not real familiar with. Has the county, say, in the last 10 years required project labor agreements from anybody? I don't think we have.
I remember that we have had any project labor agreements that we've required. What we're really doing now is establishing and making a public policy statement that that as a public agency we support fair and open competition. We don't preclude the use of project labor agreements if a general contractor bidding on a county project believes it's in their interest to do that. However, we make as a statement of general policy that we're not going to require them. And
generally, we haven't been doing it.
We have not generally been doing it, no.
Okay, that answers my question.
Does that have to do because of the size and scope of projects? We don't have projects large enough?
No.
We've had some very large projects. It has to do with our general philosophy that we have never codified that we support fair and open competition, and in our general belief that project labor agreements preclude some contractors who would otherwise be able to bid and compete from being as aggressive in seeking a successful bid outcome than they would otherwise be.
Any additional question or motion?
Some comments, Mr. Chairman. There was a lot of propaganda here today from both sides, and I personally know two people of the speakers, one who was pro, one who was against, and I take their words seriously from each one of them. I don't want this thing to be a union versus non-union, but man, it sure turned it out that way. You know, there's times where unions are extremely important. They're a part of our community, part of this nation, and there's times when it's not as necessary to be in the union. For anybody to tell me that a non-union business like Mr. Antmarine, it doesn't put out quality, I would tell them they didn't know what they were talking about. So I don't know that quality is a part of the equation here.
government projects are always going to have prevailing wage. We know that. What I heard on both sides was a ban, and I'm trying to find that in the ordinance, and from what CEO says and what I read, it's not a ban. It's saying that we're just not going to require it, and a contractor could still come in with it part of their package. I would really like to turn this more into how do we get our local people working, and that could doesn't have to take the labor agreement to get our local people working. I think we need to continue to incentivize our projects to give advantage to local companies and get our local people working. And I think that's what's most important in this community is local, getting our local workers working. Whether this goes forward today or not, it still takes a second action at the next board meeting, which is 2 weeks away. And I would encourage both sides, if there's more information to be sent my way, that they'd be encouraged to send it my way. Be open to looking at everything that is sent my way.
Any other comments?
I guess I'm just going to echo the same sentiment because I think it's important. We do have 2 weeks. I am going to talk to San Joaquin County because I should have called them. I wish I had known that ahead of time, but I will do that, see how they work. And remember, this is not a ban. This is prohibiting a requirement. I think that was well written in such that we want free competition. Everyone's striving for that. Everyone's striving for a quality job at a low cost. So please bring us the information.
I'm going to say the same thing, just kind of reiterate what Borovito said. It's not labor versus non-labor here. I don't think this is what this is about. It's just about, you know, we're talking about just preventing, forcing this on projects. I grew up, my grandpa was a plumber in the plumber's union for a million years, and it did good things for him. And this is not about union versus non-union. So like you said, we've got a couple of weeks to look at this, and so I just want to again reiterate we're not talking, and I don't know how it turned into this, but I don't think that's where we are at all, union versus non-union here. So
well, then do we have a motion to pursue this, or
what's your wish? I'll go ahead and make the motion. Okay, there, second.
I'll second that.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. Now we will go to our scheduled matters for 9:05, which Sonia Herringfield and Jamie Eggers.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, CEO Robinson, Mr. Doring. The item before you this morning is our proposal for the maximum refuse collection rates for 2011 and 2012. I'm going to turn this presentation over to my Assistant Director, Jamie Eggers, and our manager, Mandeep Dillon. So, Jamie, you're on.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead and go to the, there we go. We thought we'd start today by showing you a map that outlines the four franchise areas that we have in Stanislaus County. We start in the upper left with Area 1, that's the Bertolotti area shown in the reddish color, and that includes the communities of Salida, Keys, Crow's Landing, Grayson, and Wesley. And then moving clockwise, we have Area 2, the Jilton area shown in the purple color, and that includes the communities of Knights Ferry and Valley Home. And then moving on down, we have Area 3, which is operated by Turlock Scavenger, and it includes the communities of Denaire, Empire, Hickman, and LaGrange. And then last, Area 4, shown in the green, and that is also operated by Turlock Scavenger. And the unincorporated portions there mostly are just pockets within the city of Turlock. Now, today, three of the four areas are what you are considering for a refuse rate adjustment. Those are areas 1, 2, and 4. And later in the presentation, we'll explain why Area 3 is not included in the staff recommendation today. Each of the franchise areas has a mix of residential, commercial, and Dropbox customers. In exchange for the franchise fee that they pay, the haulers receive the exclusive right to the weekly residential and commercial accounts in their area. And the county retains the ability to both regulate the haulers and set the maximum rates that can be charged, which is why we're here today. To give you some background, staff worked with the consulting firm of Hilton Farnkopf and Hobson back in the 2008 year, along with the franchise companies, to develop a new system of how we set rates in our county. And we refer to it as base rates. And in November of that year, the board adopted the new base rates, which establishes a benchmark from which all of the rate setting from that point forward goes on. At that same meeting, the board also adopted a new methodology for the annual adjustment to the base rates. And basically, once the base is set, for the next four consecutive years, the rates can only go up or down based on a change in a series of price indexes. And currently, we're in the third of the fourth year in the index-based adjustment process. There are several components to the methodology, and we're going to go through those. First, there's a labor component, which over the past year increased only modestly, 1.2%. The biggest change, which is probably no surprise to you, is in the fuel component, and it is really the driving factor behind the rate increases that you'll be discussing today. That increased over 20%. The collection component increased just a modest 1%, no change to the interest component. Also no change to the gate rates that are charged out at the Finkrod landfill along with the waste energy facility. No change to the transfer component. The franchise fee component always changes at each interval because it is adjusted either up or down based on the net change of the combined components so that it exactly equals the franchise fee amount. And lastly, we have an other category, but there was no change there as well. Looking at the residential rate adjustments, we have just under 18,000 subscribers to weekly service in the county. 63% of those will see a 1.56% increase. That's in the Berlotti area, Area 1. 29% will see a 2.19% increase. That's in the Jilton Area 2. And 8% will see a 1.17% increase in Turlock's Area 4. Just to give you a visual of what that means, we've compared the current rates to the proposed rates using the standard type of service that customers subscribe to. That is a single 90-gallon cart. And in Bertolotti's area, the rate adjustment increase is 33 cents. In Area 2, it's a $1.37 increase per month. And in Area 4, it amounts to 24 cents. Moving on to commercial rate.
I think you meant 37 cents and not $1.37.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Area 2 is 37
cents. Thank you for correcting that. Moving on to commercial rates, we chose, that's the next slide. We have just over 2,000 commercial bin customers in the county. Over half of those will see a 1.53% increase. Again, that's in the Bertolotti area. 26% will see a 1.9% increase. That's in the Jilton area. And 17% will see less than a 1% increase in the Turlock Area 4. We've chosen the 2-yard bin size to demonstrate the rate changes here. and that would be service once a week, and that's the most common service that we see. And again, the increases there are very modest. Okay, moving on to Dropbox customers. Dropboxes in the franchise areas are requested just on an as-needed basis, and the board sets only the hall charge for those services. And there's a range of the increase, and that's because there's a range in sizes on Dropboxes, and the increase will be between just under 2% to just under 3%. Again, here we've chosen kind of a middle-of-the-road Dropbox size, the 20 to 29 yard, and the hall charges, again, are increasing very modestly. There are sort of smaller sizes, 10 to 19 yards, and 30 yards and up, but we've chosen the middle size to show the rate increase. Getting back to Franchise Area 3, back in August of 2009, the board approved the award of Franchise Area 3 to Turlock Scavenger through a competitive procurement process. The approved maximum rates for Area 3 at that time were established to be constant through this time next year. For comparison purposes only, we've shown the current basic 90-gallon cart service monthly rate in Turlock Area 4, or excuse me, Area 3, and again the 2-yard commercial bin service size and the Dropbox hall charge. Staff's recommendation is that you approve the recommended adjustments to the Stanislaus County franchise maximum rates for refuse collection service in areas 1, 2, and 4. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions from the board or comments? If not, I'll open it to the public at this time. Anyone in the audience have any comments? If not, I'll now bring it back to the board for any comment or motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
There's been a first and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those no? Pass.
Thank you very much.
Excuse me. We will now go to B26, Betty Hill Thomas, Christian Applegate. Kristen, pardon me.
You can just say Chris, it's easier. good morning, Chairman Monteith, board members, Mr. Robinson and Mr. Doering. While we're getting settled, I just want to say how pleased we are to be here today. A little over a month ago, we came to you with a donation from our community that has allowed us to come back today to offer you this proposal. And it's a very exciting time for us, a very pleasant time for me to be here because it's good news. So I hope it's good news. So. Over the last 2 years, due to the economic recession, we have had quite a big impact in our area. And so we're here today to talk to you about some of the things that have happened that hopefully will be able to offset some of these. We have had to cut many of our contract agencies, many of the services that we have used in the community for drug and alcohol services, for parent education, and various other services. We've had to reduce the number of positions in our agency, also contract positions in other agencies. And we've had to really look at how we respond to child abuse, neglect, and abuse and neglect referrals. The community has stepped forward because over the years we had worked with our community partners to knit together a good safety net for our families in our community. Over the last 2 years with the economic recession, the safety net has frayed somewhat. And so we're very pleased to be here today to share with you a unique partnership. In terms of the background, state regulation allows the use of donated local funds to draw down state and federal allocations for allowable child welfare activities. And we were in the position of not having enough local revenue to match our allocations at the state. And there was passed in 2006 a regulation at the state that allows local match to be coming from donated funds. Also, the Child Abuse Prevention Council monies are being used to reinstate services in the family resource centers. This has been able to fund our differential response program to work with families who do not yet rise to the level of court intervention. Also, we're going to be talking today about the sober living partnership that we have with people in our community, especially the Valley Recovery Resources Group, and this is going to allow us to add back 40 beds for parents in recovery from drug and alcohol abuse. This is great and going to expand the services available in the community to work with parents who and people who are trying to retain sobriety. The next chart kind of builds on the very things that we have been able to put together due to our partnerships in the community to get back to our state allocation. In our proposed budget that you saw a few weeks ago, or it might have just been last week, there was a shortfall of $443,000 not available yet to reach our full state allocation. Some of the partnerships that we've been able to utilize and build with our community are the Family Justice Center partnership. That has allowed $75,000 to come towards the child welfare allocation. The next is the Stewart Foundation, which is a private foundation. And on the left of the slide, my left, might be your right, you will see the contract years. All of these contracts go for multiple years. The Family Justice Center, the Stewart Foundation, it has $23,000. The Child Abuse Prevention Council has a plan, a fiscal plan that goes through 14-15 to provide $200,000 a year for child abuse prevention activities. The next is the Valley Recovery Resources Partnership with a contract through the end of next year and a plan to go out to bid at early next year in 12 for $145,000. And this is built to the level now where we are able to access our augmentation funds, which are available from the state. These are funds that are available to all counties once the basic allocation in child welfare has been met. So you can see it's a matter of building blocks that we've been working on with the community over the last few years. In the next slide, you'll notice that in the proposed budget, we were able to reach $10.3 million with a $2 million local match made up of general fund and realignment. That allowed us to have $12.3 million, but to access the augmentation funds, we had to reach $14 million. And on the next column up, you'll see how we were able to build that. We had the $12.3, we were able to add $298,000 total from the partnerships. The $145,000 from donation has allowed us to reach the additional allocation that we were needing to reach basic, and that has allowed us to get into the augmentation. So the total then available would be $16.7 million instead of $12.3. The next quote is, in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. And if you told me that 2 years ago when I was gnawing at my lips and grinding my teeth around the budget, that wouldn't have been something I would have thought of. But it has been a wonderful opportunity to work with other people in the community to really turn things around. And this quote has really become a reality in our county due to the generosity of our community and the commitment of many people to see that families and children are cared for. In terms of additional augmentation dollars, what this is that once we reach our basic allocation at the county level, then we are able to access funding that is 100% state and federal. And the federal funding that is available is for child welfare allowable activities that staff perform. And for that, we're able to match 50-50 with 50 cents of the dollar coming from state funds and 50 cents from federal funds. For community services that we contract within the community, that's 100% state funding. So those activities are state allowable. And so we're able to access both of those funding sources to put together a balanced approach to bringing services back into our community. On the next slide, you can see some of the services coming back. We are able to bring back some clean and sober living environment situations, approximately increasing 40 families a month that we will be able to serve. And this includes 15 beds to leasing the vacant county facility for 1 year. And so this is a good use of a public-private partnership. Also, parent education and counseling, we're able to approximately increase an additional 27 child welfare families and parents per month who will receive services. With intensive family reunification, approximately 12 more families a month can be served. And in detox day treatment services, approximately 24 child welfare parents a month will be served. And what's exciting about these, especially in the drug and alcohol service environment, is every time we're able to serve families that we're involved with in child welfare through our funding source, that increases the capacity within the community so others can be served and various other people can get the services available through behavioral health and recovery services. In terms of our plans for the augmentation dollars of the $2.7 million, we plan to contract with Behavioral Health and Recovery Services to restore 3 Behavioral Health Specialist 2 positions, and they will provide drug and alcohol assessment and case management services to our child welfare families. We also contract with the health services agencies to fill 1 existing vacant public health nurse position, and this person will assess and support services to child welfare children with special medical needs. We have quite a few children that are born with low birth weight, suffer from diabetes, we have teenagers with anorexia, and we have children that have very special medical needs, and this will help serve that. We'll also contract with the Sheriff's Office to restore 1 deputy sheriff who will collaborate with our social workers to investigate child abuse referrals as well as other crimes that impact safety to children. And they will assist in serving of protective custody and search warrants and provide social worker safety in the field when they're going out into high-risk situations. Again, this will offset some of the work that the Sheriff's Department does because then other deputies will be freed up to do other work. So. For our staff within the Community Services Agency, we are going to be able to restore 10 social work positions in our child welfare unit, and these staff will serve in the Child Abuse Reporting Hotline Unit, in the court unit, working with juvenile court, in the Family Reunification Unit to increase reunifying children with their parents, in our Family Maintenance Unit, where we're working with children who are within their home to keep them safe, and in our Permanency Planning Unit, which works with adoption and long-term foster care and guardianships. We will restore those 10 social worker positions, also restore 3 administrative support positions, such as legal clerks and those who work with the social workers, and 1 accounting position. In terms of the benefits, I wrote a note to myself that reminds me of that MasterCard commercial that says the benefits are priceless. And not to be flip, but it is definitely priceless when you can do something to protect children who are at risk and work with families who are struggling. Because every time a child grows up in a healthy, safe environment, they can become a productive adult. And that does benefit all of us because we're going to be forming a more healthy and stable society. The benefits specifically are that we are hoping these resources will help reduce the reoccurrence of abuse. It will keep children safely with their parents in their own homes. It will support families in recovery and in their sobriety. It will increase response time to child abuse reports. We will have more staff to be able to respond in a more timely manner. And it will embrace the community response for shared child protection, the safety net I talked about that we have struggled to build. In terms of what allows us to do this, I wanted to cite the county fiscal letter that specifically gave the authority to counties to do this. This was CFL is the way we talk about them, the county fiscal letter number 06-07-04. And what this did was advise the counties that the California Department of Social Services, our state governing organization, had developed a policy for the use of funds donated by local nonprofit organizations as a county match for non-federally funded programs. And this was specifically to recognize local county donations. Also, this policy applies when a nonprofit organization which provides the match also is the agency providing services under contract with the county. And it goes into detail about how to do that and do that in the correct way to meet all legal and fiscal requirements. So at this point, I'd like to turn the rest of the presentation over to Patty Hill-Thomas, and then we will be available afterwards to take questions. And I also wanted to let you know that in the audience today, we have Scott Miller from Valley Resource Recovery Center, Valley Recovery Resource, I'll get it right yet, who's here in the front, and also our department heads from Health Services, from Behavioral Health and Recovery, and the Sheriff, I believe, are still all here, in case you have any questions for them. So I'll turn this over to Patty.
Thank you, Christine. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. It is indeed a pleasure to be here. You might remember that we used this quote in May when we asked you to accept the generous anonymous donation that has really started this amazing chain of events. And I think it's worth repeating. A small group of thoughtful people could change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And that is so true. In this instance, this really says it all. What has happened here is really part of the challenge you made, Mr. Chairman, to the community as you presented your State of the County speech this year, that it's not business as usual, and the community needs to come forward and partner with its county government, and the county government needs to go to the community and partner with its residents to move and to provide the kinds of services that we're no longer able to support from a government-only perspective. Supervisor O'Brien, thank you again. It's important to say you connected the dots that no one else has, and you had an idea. I reminded everyone that it was a Christmas Eve idea, and it was one that really brought us here today. And that was an idea that was really based in not just throwing up our hands and saying, we can't afford to match those state and federal dollars that our community deserves and our community needs, but working with a small group of thoughtful people in the community who wanted to invest in the community and suggesting that their dollars come forward and match county funds to leverage and bring those state and federal dollars that we couldn't afford to bring here for those programs that are so needed. That connection was, I agree with Chris, priceless, and we thank you again. And to your whole board for embracing this in May and your support and telling us to go to work and develop a plan. The plan is before you today. It is our pleasure to have presented it to you. To the Nonprofit Valley Recovery Resources represented today by Mr. Scott Miller and their donors, they decided to invest in their community in a unique way. They decided to focus on the health and safety of their community, and it's been truly a remarkable experience. From day one after your board approved the agreement with Valley Recovery Resources, the Redwood Center, a critical piece in our nonprofit community focused on programs for families, has prospered and flourished and continues to provide services to those who really have nowhere else to go. And perhaps to all the other thoughtful groups of the people in our community or in this room who thought that maybe a crazy idea really wasn't worth pursuing, that maybe a different approach to the traditional way we've thought about government-funded programs, this is a good reminder that we can make a difference by working together and creating new partnerships. I really wanted to take that moment and to recognize and thank you all and everyone who has made this opportunity. We've asked ourselves a lot of hard questions. This isn't necessarily a forever funding source, and we'll certainly tell the people as we hire them, if you approve us, to restore those positions of that. But the reality is there are no forever funding sources anymore in government, and we really have to be creative and find new ways to provide the kinds of services that our community really needs. These are programs focused on families. I know that you know that. This kind of investment can make a huge difference in our community. And it's really an investment in prevention. Sure, many of the people that need the services are already needing social or public safety services, but this investment really talks and speaks to making a change in their lives that will result in a better community for us all. We're pleased to present the plan to you today. I want to acknowledge the efforts of the Community Services Agency team all here behind us. They have enjoyed every minute of this challenging opportunity. All of the efforts of Valley Recovery Resources, those that are here, those that aren't here, those that are anonymous for choosing to partner with us and with their local community. To our Behavioral Health and Recovery Department, Madeline Scheffler, who's been key to this, Marianne Lear, Health Services Agency Director, and Sheriff Adam Christensen for joining this collaboration and bringing forth these recommendations to you today. It's important to say, we think, that despite our daunting fiscal challenges, there is a unique opportunity here that we will be able to, as a community, serve many people in need. And we're able to do that because private citizens step forward to partner with their county government, and they decided to make a difference. We have for you six recommendations this morning for your consideration. They include, first, approving this plan for the 11-12 fiscal year for accessing the federal and state child welfare services in the amount of $2.7 million. Authorizing the Director of Community Services Agency to finalize and sign the agreements and necessary amendments outlined in your staff report for these contracted services. To authorize our General Services Agency purchasing agent, NBHRS, to provide the space for a one-year period at the vacant Series Recovery Center location for clean and sober living services with Valley Recovery Resources. To to amend the salary and position allocation resolution for the staffing impacts outlined in detail in your report. And the last two, authorize the auditor to make the budget adjustments and to approve the contracts that are listed in your report on Attachment A. All of us will be very happy to answer any questions you may have, and I would like to note that I believe Mr. Miller would like to speak to the board as well.
Any comments or questions from the board? If not, I'll open it up to the public, and Scott Miller has wished to come forward and speak.
Supervisor Board, it is, we all long to be a part of a win, something that is a real positive occurrence. And 2 years ago, as has already been stated, we were a large group of people of this community was greatly concerned as we saw everything shrinking and services shrinking. And honestly, the people we're all here that we care about, the ladies and their children who are in desperate need of a hand of help when they are ready for it, we saw that all shrinking, and we were all grabbing our heads going, what's going to happen? But we have seen, I'll call a miracle happen, because nobody could have dreamed that this win was about to come about. And I'm just humbled to be here on behalf of a humble group of people who really had no heart other than to see the services maintained and the ladies served. And we are just thrilled that through a private donation of a group of people that we could see something that none of us would ever dream, an actual expansion of services, jobs saved, an incredible collaborative effort between community and government that as a private citizen and a member, a resident of this county, we never could have dreamed that the courageous leadership of Denise Hunt and Madeline Schleffler and Jan Viss and Chris Applegate and many, many others that reached out and said, we all have a common heart to see these ladies' needs met, and how can it happen? And we've worked together now for 18 months, 2 years, revamped a budget that had us grabbing our heads, and now we're actually seeing good come out of it, what we could not have ever dreamed. So I just want to say thank you to everybody, and I just, Valley Recovery Resources is just literally humbled and privileged to be a part of it. So thank you.
Anyone else wishing to make comment? If not, I'll bring it back to the board. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple comments. This is a really exciting day. It was a unique opportunity, and there's things to go around to everybody, and it's great to rehire 18 employees who we've laid off. I mean, that is just incredible. It's incredible that this group of people came together and donated money that allow us now to draw down our share of the funds from state and federal government. It's absolutely wonderful. There's need in this county, and I don't know if we'll ever have enough to address everything that's going on in this county, but every little bit helps. Yes, this is only a one-year deal, but we'll get to work on those funds for next year. And I just appreciate everybody, all the departments who worked so hard on this. This is kind of the bonus. We got the money for the recovery, and this was the bonus money from the state, our share that we were able to draw down. So, Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion to approve all six staff recommendations.
Okay. Excuse me a minute. I'd like to say a word, too, if I may. First of all, Stanislaus County has always been a county that's been concerned about the people in Stanislaus County. The history is there. That's one of the things that astounded me when I got on board. It was a history that people have always been important to Stanislaus County. And as we were running into our financial woes of the state, the world, and et cetera, as we're all fighting the elements, it looked like we had come to an end. Our sources had dried up. But once again, the strength and the character of the community came forward. You know, I in my speech to the county, I talked about having to change ways, having to have volunteers. Volunteering comes in many different ways. You can volunteer with your action,
You can volunteer with helping the people in many ways. Money. You can volunteer in leadership. There's all sorts of ways. And I just want to commend this group and all the groups that are stepping forward and who are grasping the concept that this is their community. And it's a want-to and not a have-to. And once that is accomplished, I don't think that we will stagger in accomplishing the needs of Stanislaus County. So I just want to say thank you once again, and we're looking forward to continue working with you. Comment?
Just one more thing I'll add in here. We've talked about this. This is great. The multiplier effect of what we're doing here, and we'll save the county money down the road by helping these families. I just want to make sure it doesn't go unnoticed that there was an accountant that was rehired here. Make sure that didn't slip through the cracks.
Second to motion.
Okay. There's been a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Pass.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. At this time, we'll go to correspondence.
This board has received a copy of the Stanislaus County Assessment Practice Survey Report from the State Board of Equalization.
Refer to the assessor.
This board has received a letter from the Federal Emergency Management Agency regarding the flood insurance rate map revision for floodplain management purposes and for all flood insurance policies and renewal issued in Stanislaus County.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development and the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a copy of the California Department of Mental Health's completed Medi-Cal oversight on-site review of Stanislaus County's mental health plan.
Refer to Behavior Health and Recovery Services.
This board has received the fiscal year 2009-10 annual report of the Stanislaus County Emergency Medical Services Agency.
Refer to Chief Executive Officer.
This board has received a memo from the State Fish and Game Commission regarding the proposed regulatory action relative to the inspection of facilities for restricted species meeting on June 30, 2011. The correct name of the location of the meeting is the University Plaza Waterfront Hotel at 110 West Fremont Street in Stockton, California.
Refer to Fish and Wildlife Committee.
The board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Okay, acknowledge receipt of claim, refer to Chief Executive Officer, Risk Management Division. And at this time, anyone from Board of Supervisors have a report? If not, we'll ask the legislation, physical and management report from Chief Executive Officer and Roberts.
Yes, it does appear that we are perhaps on the verge of a majority vote budget, possibly as early as today. Based on a press conference held by the Democratic leaders in the Senate and the Assembly and the Governor's office yesterday. Some significant aspects of it, as you all know, the challenge is a $9.6 billion budget year deficit. The proposed cuts include $150 million to UC and CSU systems. A $200 million Amazon tax, a tax on purchases through Amazon.com. The deferral of $2.8 billion to K-12 and community college education. $300 million is projected for a 12% increase in DMV registration fees. $150 million increase in state revenue resulting from the establishment of a fire fee in the state responsibility areas, CAL FIRE's state responsibility areas. $1.7 billion in redevelopment funding would be redirected from RDAs to the state of California. And a projected $1.2 billion in increased revenue for May and June. The budget also projects $4 billion in new revenue, but establishes a number of triggers for additional budget cuts if the $4 billion in new revenue does not materialize. Now, I understand that there were several items that were rejected that had originally been part of the plan
$112 billion that we're projected to, $112 million that we're projected to receive from the sale of state buildings, $900 million that would have been recovered from the 1/4 cent sales tax, $1 billion that had been proposed to be taken from the first five commission. $500 million that originally was proposed to be taken from local law enforcement, which I understand now will not be, and $500 million to the UC system was proposed not be and will not be taken, as well as $700 million additional cuts in Medi-Cal programs. There are many uncertainties and unknowns still in this most recent of many proposals. It does sound, based on yesterday's comments, that the Democratic legislature and Democratic governor are in agreement on the overall nature. This would have passed, mean that the bridge tax that had not been proposed, that had been proposed by Democrats would not be put in place, and the revenue sources that were projected or that would have been projected to continue beyond June 30th will not. And this is all the very preliminary information that we have right now. We don't yet know what the underlying impact will be on local governments. I will say that the governor's proposal endorsed by the leadership in the Senate and the Assembly does fund the Public Safety Realignment Program, and I don't exactly know what that means. I'm assuming, but some assumptions can get us in trouble. I'm assuming that is at the anticipated or expected cost, which in conversations with our law enforcement agencies, we believe will allow us to at least meet the 2011-12 responsibilities relating to the realignment of public safety programs from state government to local agencies. That's all I have.
Okay. You want to announce the...
Yes, we do have announcements to make. Thank you, Chairman Monteith. Our redistricting committee will continue its evening meetings over the next three evenings, Tuesday this evening, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week. This evening's meeting will be at the Modesto Senior Center at 211 Bodum Street, June 29th. That's Wednesday evening. King Kennedy Center at 601 South Martin Luther King in Modesto, and June 30th, Thursday evening. Salida Fire Station number 1 at 4820 Salida Boulevard in Salida. Those meetings are scheduled for 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. each of those evenings.
County Council.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. After adjournment of your open session, we'll move to closed session. Conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision A, involving two cases. The first case is the Committee Concerning Community Improvement et al. Versus City of Modesto et al., United States District Court, Eastern District of California, case number CVF046121. The second case is Naomi Elias et al. Versus County of Stanislaus et al., that's Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 663544. Additionally, we'll have conference with legal counsel to discuss significant exposure to litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision B, involving one case related to calculation of property tax administration fees. Finally, there's conference with legal counsel to discuss anticipated litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision C, related to two cases. We expect that there will be a report out of closed session on one or more of these matters.
Meeting is now adjourned.